It's one of the most beloved blockbusters of all time, and the movie that defined Dan Aykroyd's career, despite him being the seventh most compelling character in the film, eighth if you count Slimer. It's Ghostbusters, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier. I'm here with two people who were on this baseball team all year, and they'd like a little of the glory, too. It's Camila Adams.
Hey, bada, bada, bada.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Swing!
The Natural, 61 and two-thirds, a three-way tie with CB4 and The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2.
I forgot we watched CB4.
That was fun. Like, I had never seen that movie.
That lineup is like HBO Max is set to show.
It really is. Wow.
We're here to talk about Ghostbusters, so I can't take too much time, but I forgot literally essential natural context last time. Neither of you are true. You're an anti-baseball person. Robin is at best agnostic.
I watched it as a kid. Makes me happy.
Do you know about Kirk Gibson?
No.
4 or 5 years after The Natural came out, aging star named Kirk Gibson came up to bat. Was sent up to bat with a serious leg injury.
Kerry Strutt style.
Yes. I forget if it was a World Series game or a National League Championship Series. Like, game on the line, ninth inning. What's he doing here? He can't walk.
Oh, God.
And hit a game-winning home run.
Wow.
And after that, everyone called him Roy Hobbs.
Oh.
So a lot of the mythology of this game is tied into that, is that it like came true a couple of years later.
Huh.
I think without that, fewer people would be like, it's the best baseball movie ever.
I think you're right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's definitely not.
No. I mean, but I'm not the person to ask. So.
What? We went over this last time. If you're still missing baseball, go back to that. But why would you? Because it's Ghostbusters time. Exactly. We'll get to that noise specifically. It's almost silly to be like, what's your history with Ghostbusters? Because it's just...
We are of age as to where it's in our DNA.
Yes.
It's existing. It's,
you have a more interesting history with Ghostbusters, Sean.
Because the livery?
Yes, correct.
This is a while ago.
I know, but it's still interesting.
Yeah. 10, 11 years ago, there were Ghostbusters live reads at Arcade Comedy Theater.
Okay.
It threatened to become an annual thing, but I think only happened 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. Mm.
But they were, you know, sold out, rapturous audiences.
I was part of one of the rapturous audiences.
Nice.
Played a key role in the development of a relationship of mine at that age. And yeah, that made me much more familiar with the script to Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Which is very good. It just kind of robbed me of the ability to just like sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
And be surprised or entered, you know. I mean, I watched it and I enjoyed it a lot, but.
Who did you read? What character?
Who do you think I read?
Egon?
Yeah. That'd be it. Did you have to ask?
Okay.
They were really good.
My best friend from college, Lexi, had this theory back in college that every woman or everyone who's attracted to men, like their type is one of the Ghostbusters.
Ah.
So my type is an Egon, but I ended up with a Ray.
Oh, I think you ended up with an Egon.
Oh, I am solid. I am lock solid. Colin is a Ray.
Yeah, I don't think Colin is dry enough to be.
That's true.
Egon.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
exactly. He's a big old goofball, but he's quite competent.
Right.
Yeah, I can see it. You're not going to like all of the Ray slander I have.
I was just going to say, I'm already saying justice for Ray stands. Come on.
Yeah, I think I am attracted to the Peter. But ended up with a Ray.
Yes, I would also argue Dan is a Ray. I think that a lot of women are into Peter when they are young and grow out of it.
Yeah.
And Lexi is one of those. Lexi was, at the time, Lexi was like, I'm a Peter. And then she is married to an Egon and dating a Ray. And so it's like, she's like, I will never, ever date a Venkman again.
I don't know. I like hints of Venkman still.
Oh, who doesn't? All
right. I would love I like a little sprinkle.
Yeah.
Is Bill Murray attractive?
No. What?
Not in any way, shape, or form.
Because.
Not even by 80s standards.
Right. Yeah.
But like, there's a lot of, like Groundhog Day, and there's a lot where he's like the, I don't want to say dashing, but the handsome charmer.
No. He's the charmer.
Yes. Charming. He's handsome, does not enter the equation. Okay. And I think I think a lot of his characters just end up wearing down his love interest. Mm. It's never like a instant, from what I remember, a lot of his roles.
To be fair, in Groundhog Day, he does it in a single day.
That's the main part of my history with Ghostbusters. Was this one of either of your movies?
Yeah. I've seen this movie probably 90 times. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you said, how you were like, it's hard to get fully invested in viewing it because it's like, I know what the next line of dialogue is.
Right.
But it's also Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I was never that into it.
Okay.
Like, I have the box set or whatever on DVD, or the double thing on DVD.
I wish I had the double, because as soon as this was over, I was like, fire up Ghostbusters 2!
But I have not seen it as much as most of my favorite movies from the 80s. And it's nothing that I would ever walk away from. It would be like, if it was on TV, sure, I would stop and watch for
a while.
And
it always was.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and I just watched it in October before I pulled it for spooky season, trying to give some child okay spooky movies.
Yep.
So...
did it work?
Ish.
Okay.
Like, she didn't stick around, but there were moments where she kind of stood and watched a little bit, but she's always on the move.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll settle down eventually. Well, maybe then you're the best to tell us what happens, since you were able to take the slightest of a fresh eye to Ghostbusters. If you don't know what happens in... All right. It has never been more pointless than in this.
Yeah.
At least in Titanic, like, there's a lot of it.
So here it's just like, guys.
It's Ghostbusters. You know what happens. Okay.
Go.
Three ghost scientists, Peter, Ray, and Egon, are fired from their university posts after a ghostly encounter. Feeling unappreciated, they start their own business, the Ghostbusters. They are visited by Dana, who's experiencing spooky shit in her apartment. They check it out, but find nothing. After a slow start, the business takes off, and they trap the first ghost, Slimer. They hire Winston, not a scientist, but looking for a paycheck. Paranormal activity in the city starts to go nuts. They bust a lot of ghosts. Zool, the gatekeeper, returns to Dana's apartment and goes full possession. Peter arrives for a date, but there is no Dana, only Zool. The other two pick up her neighbor, Lewis, who has been possessed by the Keymaster, who's looking for the gatekeeper. An EPA agent doesn't believe the hype and orders the containment unit to be shut down, releasing all the captured ghosts. Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. The team is jailed, but believing they can save New York, the mayor lets them out. The Keymaster and gatekeeper hook up to release the Sumerian god Gozer. Ghostbusters confront Gozer, who lets them choose their destroyer. Ray's brain betrays him, making a ginormous Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Risking it all, they cross the streams, causing an explosion that destroys Gozer, saves the city, covering everyone in marshmallow goo. The game, they saw, they kicked its ass.
Yay!
Do you think Tully and Dana actually fuck?
Yes.
Yeah. And I was, and my thing was like, do they ever discuss this? Like,
probably not.
How awkward.
I mean, their relationship is already like 11 on a scale of 1 to 10 as awkward goes. So I feel like maybe this could help.
We got that out of the way.
Right.
Now,
does Lewis get to count it, though? Can he notch that on his bedpost?
No.
But he's a man.
Because there's no Dana, only Zool. I guess he can notch Zool.
That's true.
Yeah, his notch is for Zool.
But not even, because if we're doing it like that, because
he was the Keymaster.
Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's
they should both get tested, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And for whatever reason.
Oh, I think they're both fine.
Like, I always kind of imagined her having a baby at the end of this.
She has a baby in Ghostbusters 2.
Okay.
Yes.
And is it? I don't remember. Do we?
It is not firmly established if it's Peter's or not, I think, is the situation.
Right. Mm. I think it's okay.
I can't recall. I have also seen Ghostbusters 2 a million times, but basically only in my childhood. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, Ghostbusters is the one I've revisited in adulthood, probably because it's way better. Although, like, I think Ghostbusters 2 is still good.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah, you're right. Like, the first one, like, I haven't seen the second one as nearly as much as...
Yeah, but I watched it so much as a kid. Because it was just one of those movies that was on TV all the time. Yeah. And like, come on, how can you not watch the Ghostbusters? Yeah.
I also did, the other clear Ghostbusters memory is the, oh, there's one here right now. Maybe I got a milk bone. I always hated that line, like, because who, like, speculates on that? Who may or may not have a milk bone at any, I mean, if anyone, Lewis Tully, but
yeah.
That's just such a weird place for, anyway, the podcast Does This Hold Up, which may or may not still be around, but it was a great, really popular movie podcast. It was based in Pittsburgh. TJ and Jamie, I think, left town at some point. That might have been the end of it. But they did a live episode with me and Aaron Kleiber as the guests at Arcade.
Oh, cool.
On Ghostbusters.
Nice.
And my favorite part of it, you know, we were talking about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and Ray choosing the form of the Destroyer by inadvertently thinking of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So clear your heads. Choose the form of the Destructor.
It was Kermit the Frog.
It was you.
I don't know if that counts.
I know. I can't. I couldn't do it.
Kermit's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those flailing arms, though. Like,
oh, yeah. Really, no, I mean,
he's really going to swipe some stuff
exactly
out.
Exactly.
But I mean, clearly that wouldn't count because they were all aware of one another. So what?
Right, yeah. Yeah. And also when he's like, he has an example.
J. Edgar Hoover. Yeah. It feels like it should have been J. Edgar
Hoover. My understanding of that is that the only person who's actually being asked the question is Ray.
Oh.
Okay.
No, because they go around. They're like, I didn't think of anything. I didn't think of anything.
I know, but it doesn't matter what they thought of because the only person being asked is Ray. That's just my...
That makes sense.
That's my way of explaining that.
Because he was the only one communicating.
Right.
Gozer is talking, is dealing with Ray.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That makes sense. I remember it to this day. Aaron's was Dora the Explorer. the kids were young at the time. And mine was the Ultimate Warrior. Just shows up whenever I go blank, the Ultimate Warrior comes on. I have facts. We could be here for a year.
I was going to say, yeah. I was thinking about this last night because I was looking through the cast and I saw the IMDb trivia is like the Bible.
Right.
And so I was like, poor Sean.
Yeah.
This was when I was like, I'm going until the page is full. It's always one page of notes.
There we go.
And then we're done, which is just going to cover the basics. You can dive in very easily on your own. Yeah. Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters was released June 8th of 1984, the 12th number one movie of that year, taking the crown only a month after The Natural. We have not moved much. It won its opening weekend with $13.5 million, kind of narrowly over fellow debut Gremlins.
Oh.
Which debuted in second with $12.5 million.
Big, iconic 80s movie weekend. Yeah.
Spooky but funny. Spooky,
right?
Yeah.
Spooky comedies.
It's going around. Unlike Gremlins, Ghostbusters won the next 6 weeks. It had a 7 week initial reign at number one, lost 1 week to Purple Rain, then reclaimed the top spot in its 9th weekend, also went back to number one in its 15th weekend.
Damn.
20 total weeks in the top 10, $229 million total, number two for 1984, lost the top spot only by $5 million to Beverly Hills Cop.
Where was this in the all-time rankings, if you know?
Not particularly high.
Okay.
It's in the top. I think
back then.
Oh, I don't know at the time.
Okay.
I mean, it was high.
It had to be pretty high.
It was high, but not, didn't threaten, you know, I think at the time it still would have been Jaws and Star Wars and E.T.
Yeah.
Which all made a lot more than this.
Sure.
But it was, briefly, the top grossing comedy of all time.
I see.
Until Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, cool.
Made more money a few months later. So popular was it that they re-released it less than a year later. They just put it back out on August 23rd, 1985.
Didn't they used to do that not infrequently, though, before home video was a big... It would, kind of at the time it would normally, in our world, be coming out on home video. They would be like, back in theaters.
Yeah,
but not that soon.
Okay,
It's been, you haven't been able to see it for 8 whole months. Come on back. spent another 3 weeks in the top 10. Then, expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
But not quite.
Okay, here's the thing. It was nominated for Best Original Song.
Yes.
And you say not quite because did they withdraw that nomination?
No.
Oh, okay.
It just lost.
Oh, yes.
To...
Expensive Baubles is only ever about the nominations, right?
I thought it was about wins.
Okay, I guess because I'm obsessed with nominations.
That's true.
Yeah, so I thought you were saying but not quite because this song, is this the time that we start talking about Huey Lewis?
Eventually, but first, what do you think it lost to? Do you know offhand?
Lionel Richie?
No.
I just called to say I love you.
Yes.
Okay.
I just called.
What movie was that in?
The Woman in Red, which I've never seen. Gene Wilder's in it. I only know about it because of the Oscars.
Lost both the Globe and the Oscar to I Just Called to Say I Love You. It lost the visual effects Oscar to.
I don't know.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Ah.
That's right. Those are better effects.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The effects here, though, are so charming. Like, they really found the right amount of, like, this is what we can afford.
Right. And then don't pay attention to Joe working the puppet strings.
Right, exactly. And it's great. Yeah.
Well, I didn't get into this, but that's because they had a remarkably short time to film.
Oh.
Part of the money deal was like, we need it by June 84. And this was sometime in 1983.
So they were like, here you go, clay blobs.
they were editing as they went. And they most of the other special effects people were occupied because it was a big era for special effects.
Right.
And normally you hire people more than a year in advance.
Right.
Yeah.
So they were like, you can do it here with very little time. And it works. But not Oscar works. And then it lost two more Globes. It lost Best Comedy.
84? Good God. I don't know.
Yeah. Romancing the Stone.
Oh, I should have known that.
And it lost Best Actor. Bill Murray lost Best Actor in a Comedy to Dudley Moore for Mickey and Maude.
I've never even heard of that movie.
I know. Right? Yeah.
Romancing the Stone was one of my go-tos.
I love that movie. Oh, my God.
But yes, speaking of the song, it spent 3 weeks at number one. That is not the answer for later. It was later in the year. Ray Parker Jr. and the filmmakers were sued by Huey Lewis and the News for ripping off I Want a New Drug.
Well, I'll edit in the little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The filmmakers eventually admitted that they used I Want a New Drug as temporary backing music.
That's always how they get you. That is truly how they always get you.
They asked Huey Lewis to do a new song like his own song, but Huey Lewis either was like, no, and or was working on Back to the Future. And they even gave the cut of the movie with I Want a New Drug as the temporary backing drip track to Ray Parker Jr. as like, do something like this.
Slightly less like.
They settled out of court for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Part of that settlement had a confidentiality agreement, which Ray Parker Jr.
broke.
Eventually sued Huey Lewis for violating repeatedly.
Including directly to Sean Collier.
Oh, that's right. I remember this story.
Have I told that story on the podcast?
We talked about this last week off mic, is that I am certain you've told this story on the podcast before,
sure,
and I don't care. We are coming in on 200 episodes.
We don't know which one.
Yes,
so
just tell the story.
I can personally confirm that Huey Lewis did not respect that confidentiality agreement.
Did it just come out of nowhere?
Because he didn't even to me.
It was like, hi, nice to meet you. Did you know that Ray Parker ripped off
Pretty
I Want a
much.
New Drug?
It's Huey Lewis was in Pittsburgh for the most tenuous reasons. There was a environmental documentary debuting at the Science Center. Huey Lewis had licensed music for The Thing.
Huh.
And
he learned his lesson.
Yeah. And was making appearances because the Science Center was excited about it, even though like it was literally nothing beyond Huey Lewis likes the environment and yes, you can use my song. So they were having him on Pittsburgh Today Live on a Thursday, which is the day that I'm on there. For whatever reason, I was actually in early at this time. And someone was like, hey, Sean, would you like to meet Huey Lewis?
Obviously.
Here he is. And then just left us in a green room for like 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I got through telling Huey Lewis that my wife introduced herself to me by saying I was also born in 1985. That was a big year for Huey Lewis in the news. He seems to like that. But Huey Lewis can't really hear anymore.
Yeah,
oh, shame.
I saw a documentary about that.
He can read lips a little bit, but clearly he prefers to talk at you so he doesn't have to do that.
Right on.
I see.
So he just started monologuing about various topics, but within 5 minutes it was to Ray Parker Jr. ripped me off. Definitely to repeat myself, the highlight of this was Huey Lewis claiming that he walked into the recording session for We Are the World and walked up on the riser and looked to his right and was standing next to Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. who said, "Are you Huey Lewis?" And yes, yes, I am. Whew, Ray Parker Jr. ripped you off, man.
He's like that drunk uncle mm-hmm. at your family gatherings is like, you know, fucking shoes were my idea. Yep. Like, you know. I mean, not to take anything away from what's rightfully his, but no. It's just like, why, sir?
Let it go, like, man. Right? Let it go. Because also, I got to say,
he was very nice.
Ripping off the music is no bueno, but yeah. Great song, right?
Oh, yeah.
Busted makes me feel good.
You think it's better or is Bobby Brown's in the second version along the same lines Ooh. Of it? I forgot to listen to it.
That's the one that's like, dun, 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 dun. That one?
It's fine.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not as listen, memorable. All of my not as memorable, clearly.
It is exactly the same. It's like, listen, Ghostbusters 2 is not as good as Ghostbusters. That doesn't mean it's bad.
Right, right.
Yes.
Well, same as Answer the Call, which is not the real movie. It's
oh, God. Just called I can't believe they renamed. I don't like when they rename movies after the fact. Mm-hmm. It makes me very grumpy, in fact.
Live, Die, Repeat.
Don't even talk to me about it. You made a choice. Stick with it.
You know, Live, Die, Repeat?
No, what is it?
You know, Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie.
Edge of Tomorrow was a better title.
When it hit streaming, they were like, Live, Die, Repeat, because they wanted to. Oh, that's the one where he
sometimes
dies.
Sometimes they would
back.
Say Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, because we clearly don't want anybody to find the fucking movie. Like,
right.
Why?
It's just... Oh, just it's so
let
dumb.
Let it
Harley Quinn, colon, Birds
don't
of Prey.
Don't even talk to me. I'm going to get, like, that was a bad title, but they made a choice. They have to deal with
right.
it.
Right. Seriously. You wrote it in pen. Let it go.
Since it came up, Ghostbusters 2 made $112 million. That's a lot of money in 1989, but it's less than half of this and went a long way to there not being a Ghostbusters movie for 20 years after that. Ghostbusters 2016 made $128 million. That's decent, but they wanted a lot more. Afterlife made $129 million, and Frozen Empire made only $113 million.
It's really interesting. People talked so much about how Ghostbusters 2016 was a huge, awful flop disappointment.
And with inflation, it made more than both of the newer ones.
And no one ever talks about that. This is me learning that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I hate people.
I haven't seen the other two.
Okay. Neither have I, and I never will. Because the whole thing where they were like, we're sorry that we put women in a movie and asked you to watch it.
Oh my
we
God.
Will never do that
Let's
again.
Rectify
We're
the
bringing
situation
back the
now.
Director's son so that you know for sure that only boys will touch your toys.
They're so bad. They are so bad. I know I've gone on this rant how many I've more than I've meant told the Huey Lewis story. But, and I think I vetoed Afterlife.
You preemptively vetoed Afterlife.
From us ever having to deal with it because I'm so mad because, spoilers, it has basically AI Harold Ramis. Yeah, you would say CGI, but like every problem we have with AI is present in that version of Harold Ramis. He can't consent to being in a movie after he's dead.
Well, did he? I mean, you is can like, in a contract.
You can in a contract.
And
I
people usually do, but I don't.
How? When? What? When he was alive, when would that have come up? Are we just saying using my likeness?
Correct. Okay. Yes. Right.
But that's different from having Egon on a poster is different from the ghost of him is walking around. Right. But more than that,
actors, check your fine print. Decide what you want your ghost to be doing.
The essential thing is that those movies are movies about wanting to be an adventuring Ghostbuster because it meant something to you in your youth. Mm-hmm. That's not Ghostbusters.
No.
Ghostbusters are silly ghost comedies. Yeah. This is the worst kind of nostalgia porn where it's like, you're not even recalling the thing. You're recalling your feelings about the thing and making that the story.
Right.
Whereas Answer the Call is...
Stop calling it that.
Ghostbusters 2016... It's just a good legacy reboot. It's funny.
Legacy sequel.
It's not as good, but they never. It's Scream 5. It's, you know.
And it did. The thing I loved so much about Ghostbusters 2016 is like I got the feelings I got when I watched Ghostbusters when I was a kid. Not because it was like, remember how you felt when you were a kid?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But because it recreated those feelings through actual storytelling.
Yeah, and it was all still the same vibe of the spooky comedy. And we also had our cameos, too. Like, was it Bill Murray and the other guy?
I think all of them
but Dan Aykroyd.
Ernie Hudson were all there?
Ernie was there. Ernie was there. Uncle. Leslie Jones's uncle.
Yes,
I
think it was just Harold Ramis who they had his pictures in the back. I believe it was a bust, in fact.
Yeah.
An animated film and another live action film are in development, obviously.
If they made an animated film that was in the style and spirit of the 80s, the real Ghostbusters, I would be seated. I did watch the real Ghostbusters as a child. I also drank so much Ecto Cooler. Ecto Cooler was the Diet Coke of Child Robin.
I didn't write all of that down because that's too complicated to get into. They didn't know if they would be able to call it Ghostbusters because there was a different cartoon of that name in the mid-70s.
Huh.
And they did not fully have the rights. There are scenes and alternate takes where everything says Ghost Breakers, which doesn't solve the problem because there's also a Bob Hope movie called Ghost Breakers from the 50s. But they were going back and forth. They got these crowd shots where crowd was chanting Ghostbusters, and they were like, we literally can't get that again. You have to get the rights to the name Ghostbusters. They made some deal with the animation company that owned that cartoon, but allegedly maybe not violated it in the strict letter of the contract, but did Hollywood accounting and didn't give them any money.
Oh, boy.
So that company put out a new shitty cartoon called Ghostbusters after this hit. There's like 7 or 8 episodes of a Ghostbusters cartoon that is not related to this franchise from like 1986 because they were like, we can, you violated the agreement.
Huh.
And that's why the cartoon is called The Real Ghostbusters.
Interesting.
Anyway, that was a whole mess. Some alternate casting, and then I'll wrap up facts. Only Aykroyd and Murray were locked in the whole way.
Well, this was originally written for Belushi.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't write down all these details because once it gets into what Dan Aykroyd was thinking at any given time.
Yeah, sure.
He wrote this for himself and John Belushi, and it was going to be much more serious and scary and go to space.
Okay.
Because Dan Aykroyd.
Right, exactly.
And truly, when Ivan Reitman came on, he was like, make it funny and fun and on Earth.
Do you know what your skills are?
Right. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that.
And Harold Ramis helped that along as well, obviously. But only Aykroyd was never in doubt for the role. Murray was, they needed him, but weren't sure if he was going to do it because it's Bill Murray. Really, up until shooting began, they were not 100% sure. So they also looked at Michael Keaton, Chevy Chase, Tom Hanks, Robin Williams, Steve Guttenberg, and Richard Pryor, all for that role.
I think Richard Pryor and Robin Williams would have been too much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Richard Pryor would have worked. Robin Williams would have been too much. That's really the only way to phrase it. Yes. Chevy Chase would have been Chevy Chase, and that would have been kind of grody.
He would have been better as Egon. Not saying that famous, not that he would have been better than Harold as Egon, but more suited to that.
Egon, despite Harold Ramis being there the whole time, they weren't entirely convinced. They looked at Christopher Walken, John Lithgow, Christopher Lloyd, Jeff Goldblum, and also Michael Keaton.
Totally.
All of those would work. I love Harold Ramis, and I'm glad he had the role. He's amazing. Yeah. Egon is my favorite, but all of those would work.
I collect spores and molds. I
collect spores, molds, and fungus.
And fungus.
Now do Jeff Goldblum.
I can't get it right now. No. They're too close.
Spores.
Yes, I have a secret.
Molds.
Winston, fairly obviously, was written for Eddie Murphy.
Too much.
I feel like that is not, like, I guess it's like, we wrote the black character for the famous black comedian at the time, but like, I don't see Eddie Murphy playing that character.
Yeah. Well, that's...
was Garrett. Whoever the other one, the other choice.
Ernie Hudson says that his role shrank by half after the script.
That's zero surprise. That's too bad.
Because they wrote all of this stuff for Eddie Murphy, and when they didn't have Eddie Murphy anymore, they were like, well, we don't need
him. Which is a shame. Ernie Hudson is so great.
He's very good.
Great. I met him once, real quickly. Nice guy.
At a convention?
Yeah.
Also, he looks it was when I, at least so
it was
good.
When I was working the convention, so it was back in the green room. So,
oh, nice.
They dangled, like, would you like to do an interview to promote the convention with Ernie Hudson? I was like, yes, I want to talk to a Ghostbuster, and right. it didn't happen. I forget who I talked to instead.
Yes, I want to talk to a Ghostbuster. Assume that.
Yes. For Dana, Daryl Hannah, Kelly LeBrock, and Julia Roberts auditioned.
Okay.
Yeah, Sigourney.
Yep. Mwah. Agreed.
They didn't think she could do it because she had a pure drama reputation at the time, and they said that to her, and she started crawling around on the floors like and barking like a dog to like I don't have to be serious.
Love her.
And they were like, okay,
I love her too. Also, that's hilarious. Like, she is so funny.
Yeah.
Like, she is a great comedic actor. So I'm really glad that she got the chance to do this.
They really wanted John Candy to play Lewis Tully. He didn't get it and was like, I'm gonna do it with a strong accent and my character is gonna have four German shepherds, and they were like, you know what, never mind.
Yep.
It works better with the little guy.
It is impossible to imagine anyone other than Rick Moranis in that role.
He is more perfect than anyone in the movie.
100%
absolutely who it has to be. And my favorite, they wanted Paul Reubens to play Gozer.
Okay, who did play Gozer?
Yeah.
Is this one of those things where I'm going to find out it's Mercedes McCambridge and be like, what?
No, some tall European lady.
Oh, okay.
Not Brigitte Nielsen.
An uncredited voice actress.
That's what I was going to, I was actually thinking about the voice, not
in my
the
head,
face.
I was like, this should have been Grace Jones.
Yes!
They said she based the character on David Bowie and Grace Jones.
Nice.
Slavica Jovan from Yugoslavia.
Was the actor?
It was the body.
Okay.
Patty Edwards was the uncredited voice.
Who's Patty Edwards?
I have no idea. Okay. She doesn't even have a Wikipedia.
Oh, well, there we go.
So, yeah, Ghostbusters is good. What do you want? I don't know.
One of the things I did Google was, like, how much is the science, like, based on fact? And a lot of it is based on fact. Not that, yes, we capture ghosts.
Right.
But, like, a lot of the science, there was a lot of research that was gone into it.
Like, what would a proton pack be?
Yeah, to make, like, the fictional world more credible. And physicists were consulted.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's good.
One question I have, what's Venkman's PhD in?
He answers that.
What is it?
He has degrees in psychology and parapsychology.
You could get a degree in parapsychology?
I'm sure someone can get a good, you can get a degree in lots of stuff.
Also, can you imagine that man as a shrink?
We get to see a bit of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Creeptastic.
They were right to fire them.
Them or him?
Them. Yes.
I'm still not clear on what they were doing.
I think, like, that Venkman was the one with the grant, and they were sort of like hangers-on.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I got that impression.
Yeah.
Because we've seen The Men Who Stare at Goats. There were people semi-seriously researching psychic phenomenon at various points.
Just to be clear, I have not seen The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Me either.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I believe you.
Yeah. Okay. Dan Aykroyd. I don't think he's all that good. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think he serves his purpose as he's almost like this childlike.
Yes.
Vibe there, especially like with the fire. Like, it's not like we need him, but I think he's helpful.
Also, I get the impression the business is only succeeding because he has his head on his shoulders, right? Like, Egon's going to go.
He's the one who gets them stuck in a terrible building and buys them a terrible car for $5,000 in 1984.
That's what I'm saying, is that he makes choices and gets things done, right? I think that Egon would be collecting his mole spores and fungus, and Venkman would be trying to pick up chicks, and nothing would ever happen.
So he's the paper pusher.
Yes.
He is the one that fills out the paperwork.
Yes.
He clearly is working the hardest, but, like, archetypally, maybe not a word.
Emotional core.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's what they say. That's what he
says. He's the heart. Yeah.
It's a frequently cited thing that Egon's the brains and Venkman is the charm and Ray is the heart. But in what way is he the heart?
Zedmor is the spirituality.
He's like the believer. He's not necessarily like the science believer. I think that he's like the believer of it all. He's like Xander.
Yeah. Xander's also the heart.
Right. Yeah. Xander's the heart.
I think that Venkman is the cool face of the operation. Yeah. Egon is perfect as the nerd smart one.
He legitimizes. He makes them legitimate.
Yeah.
And Winston is the
He's the audience.
Sardonic. I don't
care. I'm also here. Hello.
No, he's the audience. No, he's the one to ask the questions that the audience is going
to
ask.
And react and be the guy that's there to say that's a big Twinkie. Like, that's important. And Ray is the what? I just never believe. I don't believe him as a nerd. I don't believe him as a cool guy. Every time he has a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, I'm like, you don't even know how to light that. Like, I don't believe him.
Do you not like Dan Aykroyd?
Not particularly.
Okay. Well, first of all, I love Dan Aykroyd. Secondly, I was shocked how much people smoke in this movie. Like, yeah, it's so weird.
It doesn't happen as casually anymore.
It's so weird how people are just smoking indoors and outdoors and just constant smoking. But yes, he does look really goofy with the cigarette dangling from his lips.
Mm-hmm. I just don't buy him.
Okay. I don't know. I like him.
I'm more interested in those three, Dana, Tully. Why did I say the seventh?
Who's Tully?
Lewis. Rick Moranis. Moranis. Yeah.
Why did I say the seventh most compelling character?
You said
the secretary?
Other
three,
the other. Oh, definitely. More Annie Potts all the time.
Colin was so upset. He's like, they just started a business and they already have a secretary.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
and I was like, you expect a man to answer a phone in 1984?
That part. But, you know, go Kevin. in afterlife or whatever. What is it? Answer the call.
He is so funny. I forgot how much I love that character.
No, Kevin.
The bit God. With I the need logo to watch that right the now. Boobs. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What was my dog's name?
Hat. Oh, it's a cat, right? My cat's name, Hat. I need to watch Ghostbusters 2016 immediately.
And when he pokes his fingers through the glass.
There you go. Chris Hemsworth, another person who had not really done comedy.
Right.
And they were like, we trust you, buddy. And he nailed it.
Yeah.
I'll leave.
And then, like, they knew how to write Thor from then on because of that movie.
This is what we should have been doing.
Himbo.
I will leave Dan Aykroyd alone after this, but the ghost blowjob dream sequence.
Mm. His idea?
I forgot about that.
The worst moment in the movie?
Yes, definitely the silliest thing that happens. It's,
what are we doing here?
I agree. Unnecessary.
It's apparently there was a much longer sequence where he actually like did some work on his own and had a relationship with a ghost. And all they got was that, and they were like, turn it into a dream sequence.
Oh, God.
But it's so bad, and it's so dumb, and it's not even like, it's a PG movie, whatever, I don't care. It's that, why is this here?
Yeah.
And I'm grossed out.
Yeah, it doesn't further the plot of anything at all. It doesn't serve comedic, really, and it is gross.
In contrast,
also,
Rick Moranis talking to a horse. The best moment.
Oh, God.
Go ahead. God. I'm gonna.
Like, we will be freed. What is it? We will be released from your shackles. Or
also, wait, on the bingo card, human with non-human eyes. Tully.
Oh, yes. Oh, and I do also love the scene where Rick Moranis gets attacked outside the restaurant and like nobody. They watch.
they
and
watch
then just
and
go
then,
right back to.
So anyway,
their creme brulee.
Mm-hmm. One of the lines that jumped out at me when doing the live reads was Winston's salary. This job is not worth $11.5 a year.
Really?
11, and I didn't know, I already did it.
I was just reaching for my phone to get the inflation calculator out. I'm obsessed with inflation calculator. Oh, yeah.
Approximately $36,000 today.
Okay, that's fine. Not in New York, but
for
like...
busting ghosts?
For having a bullshit startup job?
That's true.
I guess it's better than most nonprofits.
Right, exactly. That's what I was... Listen, I work in the nonprofit sphere. I was like, that's reasonable.
That feels right. Well, he's a single man. No kids. He's fine.
That's true. I mean, I think you got to get to 40 at least.
Yeah, just I know.
Just on the hours.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the EPA and the conservatism? I don't buy
it. So. I don't. That's the thing. Sean, explain this controversy so that we can then say this is dumb.
And we're not talking about the wingnut sphere of conservatives. We're talking about the very traditional, like you'll find things
small
about
government
this.
Conservatives.
Right. You'll find lists of conservative leaning movies from, I want to say The Economist. I don't know if The Economist is actually one of them. At various points, thinking conservatives have held up Ghostbusters as an example of a strong conservative message in Hollywood because it is Reagan era small business making things of themselves while government overreach in the form of the EPA tries to shut it down. And I think that's a purely surface reading.
Agreed.
The EPA is not the villain. The EPA is the second act obstacle.
Yes.
Right. It's not about that.
Right. 100%. And then also, I would like to point out that when they get the mayor on their side, he says, what can I give you? And they ask for, like, the fascism entourage to take them to where they need to go bust ghosts.
That's government intervention.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you could say the EPA, but it's really just one guy with a stick up his ass.
Exactly.
Who admittedly is only fired up because they wouldn't play ball.
Yeah.
Whereas the mayor giving the full strength of the government is decisive. So I don't buy it. Hey, conservatives who think, I feel for you right now, so if you need this, take it. But I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Conservatives who think.
I mean, really, must be a hard time. What else?
I don't know. It's hard to talk about. That's the thing. We land on these iconic movies and we're always like, yes! And then it's like, wait, what do we say about that hasn't been said?
Right. And it's
Sigourney Weaver's crazy hot.
Super hot.
I love that Zool perms her hair for her.
does like a real deep dark like eye.
Yes. For her. Yes.
Like, no.
And I'm just wondering, like, so she just had that dress
she
already?
She must have just had that dress.
No one's collarbone shoulder region has ever been hotter on
film. Yeah. You're right.
This is true.
And I would move into her apartment today. The ghost can stay.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not a symphony musician's apartment.
No, she must come from old money.
Yeah, but
I don't think that's an accountant's apartment. No. They say it's the penthouse.
Well, that's referred. No, she does have kind of a corner thing there.
They actually say corner penthouse. I'm remembering this because it's in the trailer.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do? You have?
They're here. Ghostbusters. They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
All right, that's bad. Okay.
They're professionals.
Did you see it?
They're all that stand between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Real wrath of God type stuff. Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Your girlfriend lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You want this body?
Is this a trick question?
Ready!
Ghostbusters, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, coming to save the world.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
We came, we saw, we kicked it.
I was actually going to cut that line out now that I think about it. Now when I watch the trailers, I'm always like, what am I going to cut? What am I going to cut? It's kind of ruining watching the trailers for me. Good 80s trailer. Come on.
The scariest part of the movie is Venkman sliding down a fire pole with chopsticks in his mouth. Final destination.
Oh, God.
It's
too much.
And the Letterboxd list is Letterboxd Easter eggs. This is on the list of movies where if you go to the page.
If you log it, it does something fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some of them are web only. I know so few people, myself included, ever do much of Letterboxd on a laptop. But if you go to the actual web page for Ghostbusters on Letterboxd, like the O is the no ghost symbol and Slimer is there and it oozes and things, look over this because it's delightful.
Do it on a laptop, I guess.
And some of them are app exclusive. My favorite is Fight Club. A pop-up reading, you are about to break the first and second rules of Fight Club, publish anyway, appears if you post a review of Fight Club.
That's cute.
I like this.
I see the Ghostbusters thing. Letterboxd is slimed.
Tenet, the page is vertically mirrored if you scroll all the way down. Mm-hmm. For Tar, it just says Letar boxed.
Ah.
Some of them are better than others.
Did they include the accent?
They did.
Okay, thank God.
You know, somebody really took a lot of time to do something like this that nobody, like not too many people know exists.
I always am curious, did the studio pay for that?
With Letterboxd?
Yeah.
I'm beginning to suspect that studios are doing it more often because there's effect for Begonia and Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, which they wouldn't do on
right.
their own.
Yeah. Well, maybe Frankenstein, but certainly not Begonia.
The other one is if you try to click back on the Groundhog Day screen, it just sends you back to Groundhog Day again.
Oh, that would annoy the piss out of me.
Me too.
Throw it all away.
How do you rate Ghostbusters? I started at 90.
I forgot to rate it.
I added one for the brilliance of the line, Ray, if someone asks if you're a god, you say yes.
I love that.
But I
took a shirt.
But I took two away for the ghost blowjob, so 89.
I'm at 90.
990.
Very, not a lot of controversy on this
no.
one. It's
no.
It's a good...
Guess what? But. Ghostbusters is great. Breaking news!
I mean, why did anybody tell me about this?
It's interesting that none of us went high 90s.
It's not that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and also it's, I do think a big, I think if you asked me when I was 9, I would be like 105.
Right, right.
I've watched this movie so many times that it's, the luster has gone down a tiny bit.
Also, one of my favorite things about it is the cold open scene. Mm-hmm. Like it's so great to just the in setting the tone for the rest of your 2 hours.
Also, that librarian actress nails the part.
Yeah.
She understood the assignment.
Right, exactly. Oh, God. And when they ask her, like, are you menstruating right now? Like, what the fuck? First of all, read the room. Second.
I know, come on. Don't ask that period. But also use your brain.
Don't ask that period.
Don't ask that full stop.
Full stop is better. 89 and two thirds. 89 and two thirds for Ghostbusters. If you're mad that we didn't get into the 90s, you're why they are making bad Ghostbusters movies now. But we love it. We already mentioned for the bingo card, human with non-human eyes. It's released in Robin's birth year, but she already earned that for The Natural. Anything else? No one was out of ammo. They never...
Yeah, I kept waiting and hoping for that to be relevant, but they changed the nature of their ammo rather than run out of it.
Yeah. You can make an argument for Character Masters, a complex skill without training, because they haven't tested these in full and they're able to...
I did put a maybe mark on mine.
I know it. I was wondering about that.
For literally busting ghosts.
Yay! Yeah.
We're all over this one, but I do not have a bingo.
Neither do I.
Not yet. I'm still like two away from every bingo.
I am now one away in three directions.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I know that Robin and I have a slate of awards movies, so we'll start with Camila, and then you can, you know.
Probably two, right?
I've only had time to do two movies.
Okay.
Two movies. I've been watching Smoke on Apple Plus. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle remake.
I keep almost putting that on. Okay, thank you.
It's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
And they changed the script enough to where it's not like a direct, obviously, of a remake of the other. But just name it something else. That's not it anymore. That's not The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. And it also makes it less compelling, the villain's reasonings behind it. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's kind of like Hulu could have kept it. But worse than that, The Materialists.
I saw your low Letterboxd score.
I should not be that bored with Pedro Pascal and Chris Evans on screen. What a waste of everybody's fucking time. The tone is all over the place. There's we've got behind the door sex scenes. The fuck?
There goes a star in my rating.
Exactly.
That closed door is unacceptable.
Right. I'm like, why am I here? And I know y'all enjoyed Dakota.
Yeah.
But I do not. I just can't.
Yeah.
I can't with her. She's not she's not enjoyable to me to watch her on screen. It's like she has a thing about her that's like, you know, you don't have to act, right? Like, you don't, like, who is making you do this? Like, that's what it feels like. She's doing this against her will.
Cut in the limes, please.
Always.
I love limes. I love them. They're great. I love them so much, and I like to present them like this in my house.
And once I thought shit was going to get super duper interesting, when she reaches over, and spoilers, when she reaches over and touches the scar on his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he storms out of bed and you saw him, blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
so stupid.
You had the surgery. Oh, God. Like, I can't take any of this seriously.
Why? Like, the thing that we talked about this when I saw it, and I really liked it, but like, why would you be ashamed of that?
But it's just like,
why? Who is willing to get that surgery?
Right.
But I don't know.
It like, doesn't no, make sense to
like,
me.
Like, you can hide that you got it.
Right.
You know, like, it's not, that's not something like you're going to, like, people who knew you, like, you have to just, like, cut off everybody that knew right. you in the past life.
Right.
So you can't be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
And also, like, in the story, I really wish we just left the fucking love triangle alone and just let's her job. That was the most interesting.
Oh, I think you're right.
Storyline and this whole thing. We should have just done a whole movie about what was going on with her job because they tried to like neatly tidy that up too quickly. Like, you know, it was like, it's interesting. Like, what's her job? And then, yeah, what fuck do you do if there's sexual assault that happens on this kind of thing?
Right.
Like, what are the, who is liable and who, like, who is, why, how? And then the girls, like, they're just become friends again. It's just.
Yeah. Also, I completely, you mentioned the tonal shifts. I was like, oh, yeah. But, and I forgot about the assault and yeah. how yeah, dark
I,
that gets.
I also liked it a lot at the time. But now that you're talking, I'm like, maybe not.
So anyway,
it certainly doesn't linger with you.
No, no. I'm still going to say I like it, but I'm a Dakota Johnson super fan yeah. as established. But,
and I knew better. I knew better. But I'm, no, glad, you, I'm glad I didn't pay money for it. That's
yeah.
what I'm
saying. You knew better, but also, can you really say no to Pedro Pascal?
I know, and he's there with his yeah. eyes, like, you know, come in there, come on. Come
you can't really
come,
know better
come and
than
watch
that.
Me for 2 hours, Camila, come on.
You can't know better than that. You just can't. You can't be that smart.
It's like Captain America is here. Yes. See, see. That's all.
Where shall we begin?
I don't know. Why don't you talk about Begonia so I can figure out what I want to talk about?
Oh, I don't like it. I know Letterboxd loves it.
Really?
Yeah. It's a very Letterboxd coded movie. Mm. Reviews were mixed. The general public does not care.
Did you guys go to the theater to see this?
I did.
I haven't seen
yeah.
it.
Look, I am up for this. Poor Things was my number one movie of that year. And even Kinds of Kindness, I think I was like 4 stars or 4.5. Mm-hmm. Not this time.
Sure.
It feels like they like hanging out and making a movie, so they kept hanging out and making a movie, even though they had nothing in particular to do with it. More than that, I hate the ending. I don't remember whether or not it's the ending. You know this is a remake?
Yes, I do.
I don't know whether or not this is lines up with the
original,
and I don't care because you changed a million other things. You're free to change the ending.
Right.
It truly is like, you had a point for an hour and a half. And I didn't love the movie, but the point was kind of interesting enough that I would have gone, you know, 6 out of 10, 7 yeah. out of 10. Mm. And then we're just like, what would be the fuck you ending? What would be the stupidest twist ending? And you went with that. And it made me not like it at all. Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons are good because
they are.
They're yeah, they can't not be. And there are things to like about it, but it just pissed me off. And I am very much the target audience. Mm, so mm-hmm. I think I'm right.
Speaking of Sean being the target audience, let's talk about Frankenstein.
Yeah, now
I haven't finished it yet.
So, oh boy. Okay. Well,
I mean, I can probably chime
no spoilers in, but, for this yeah. 200-year-old story.
Right. Now available for home viewing where it doesn't belong. It's
no, this is absolutely a
yeah
theater.
This is, I'm so tired of this is the thing. I couldn't see the theatrical screening of Frankenstein and I was unwilling to drive close to an hour to a theater that was showing it. But I always have this feeling, I've talked about this on the show before, of people telling me that I'm wrong to not like something because I watched it the wrong way. That's and I'm
not,
like,
that's not right.
I'm like, no. Fuck
I don't
off.
Think that's
valid. Some of my favorite movies of all time I've seen on airplane seatbacks.
Yeah.
If your movie is good, it does not matter.
Right.
And Frankenstein is not good, so it matters.
Also, Guillermo, I feel like his stuff needs to be seen on a big screen. Even Cabinet of Curiosities, like I loved half of them. I felt like I really should have been watching it on the big screen.
I mean, I'm glad I saw Pacific Rim on a big screen, but boy, does it work on an airplane seatback because it's a good movie.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's... I don't understand what you're doing because...
And I don't understand what Guillermo del Toro's doing signing a contract with Netflix if he's only going to make movies that only look good in theaters.
Mm. Well...
Like, you know what their MO is.
I've now been to 3 in-theater screenings because Netflix is so thirsty for awards that they do in-theater screenings for critics across the country right. of all of this stuff, even though most of these are not available to be seen in theaters across the country.
Right.
I think I've now done 3 for this year in Frankenstein, Train Dreams, and Jay Kelly. I'm doing another one tonight in Knives Out, And yeah. These are on all of those movies are inherently theatrical. And I'm like, why?
Jake Kelly will be fine at home.
Jake Kelly will be fine, but it still feels like an in-theater movie.
Okay.
I'm like, why aren't
the train dreams?
Why aren't you buying Regretting You? Why aren't you?
Right.
Why aren't you buying, you know,
the Materialists?
The Materialists. Why aren't you buying these movies where it really doesn't much matter?
Right.
And instead you're buying Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And letting them make it for 2.5 hours when you're like, when you know for a fact and you lean in with your series to people are kind of on their phones. So why the fuck do you want Frankenstein and Train Dreams? Movies that need to be not watched while you have a phone in one hand.
And I will say, so Frankenstein, Frankenfine, right? Like I said before, it's a bad movie. It's not actually bad. It's just, it was never going to be good even if I saw it in a theater is sort of where I landed on it. But Train Dreams, I did go to the screening. I don't think I ever would have finished that movie at home.
Yeah.
Because Joel Edgerton's in it and I don't find him charming and it's slow and it's very Malicky and like it's if you have to be in the right frame of mind, but when you go into the theater, the right frame of mind just comes to you,
right?
And or at least that's my experience.
Also, you're trapped,
essentially, right? Exactly. Like, and watching Train Dreams in the right frame of mind, like I only gave you 3.5 stars, but like most people are giving it 4 to 5, and it's great.
It
Sean.
Is my number 2 movie of the year as we sit here, because it is about a sad old man walking around trees and being sad in the old times.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm here.
Yes.
It is very, I do like it.
I do recommend it. And I you can't probably watch it at theaters unless you live in New York or LA or maybe Chicago. But like if you live in Pittsburgh, do put it on and put your phone away because you might be transported in the way that Sean was.
But this is about Frankenstein.
Sorry.
I said on this podcast it was my number one most anticipated movie of this year because I am me and I can't, what would I, was I going to lie to you? And so the fact that I only gave it an 8 out of 10 is a bad review.
Mm.
I still like it a lot because it does the Frankenstein stuff. It has a very good cast and it's Guillermo del Toro. Visually, it's remarkable.
It does look great.
Production design is fantastic. So is the costume and the makeup. There are so many visually arresting moments.
Yeah.
He adapted the book and the book does not really work as a movie.
Mm.
The book, you know, has a starting at the end and let me tell you the story thing. Mm. And then spends way too much time on Victor Frankenstein as a child.
Yeah.
Cut all of that
shit
out.
Yeah. Gone. Yeah.
And so I think it kind of fails structurally more than
it started
anything.
Off strong.
Yeah.
At the very, like with the prelude.
I was like, 5 stars. Right, I love this.
Yeah. Right. And I was like, yes, let's do this.
Yes.
And then
when he shakes that boat, I'm like, yes.
And what's funny is like when he starts to slide into the frozen lake or whatever, in my head, I see a freeze frame. You might be wondering how I got like
that. I mean, that's kind of what happened.
I think it's still worth watching.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not worth watching. I just am. I'm disappointed both in the film and in just the general, the Netflixian context of it.
Frankenstein is a movie and not a book that people talk about because it was pulpy and shocking. Mm. You have to remember that in 1932, Boris Karloff's made up face on a giant wall made people lose their shit. So make a quick, pulpy, scary movie.
Just to be clear, Frankenstein the book was a huge, successful, like populist hit.
Right, but so are a million books. The reason why you think of it as a movie is because it was shocking and pulpy.
Okay. I just don't want to in any way discount Mary Shelley.
Oh, no.
Or like she invented the genre.
She invented
like
science fiction.
And also like that I have actually read Frankenstein. I've read so few books. Mm-hmm. And it is a genuinely good book. Yeah. I do think what you're saying is that structure works in a book in a way it doesn't necessarily work in a movie is right on.
Right. So James Whale turned it into pulp, where the book is not pulp. Mm. And so trying to, it's not the same kind of pulp.
Yeah, no.
And so trying to do like the serious literary version is for the book, not for the movie.
Right.
And that's why I think it doesn't quite work.
I tried to understand how a blind man can teach this creature how to read.
Hmm.
Braille?
I don't think it exists.
Yeah.
Good point. Maybe he's just like mostly blind.
Okay.
Yeah.
I tried to understand how in an era where there aren't machines making noise, you don't notice a giant living under the same roof as you.
Exactly. Especially a blind, like.
There's only so much sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, also, I mean, how quickly they leave him presents, and then somebody gets a little boo-boo, and they're all, will it kill the beast?
Right. Kill the beast. He's been fucking tending to your entire farm. Like, let it go.
I gotta say, I don't know if you've, have you reached, like, seeing the monster, like, up close?
Yeah, I'm to the point where he's telling his story, his side of the story now. So after he's, like, you know.
I don't love the character design. He looks like the guys in Prometheus. Colin pointed that out.
I'm not.
I think they could have made him grosser.
Right. Like, we were too busy trying to sexify this dude. Yeah. Like, let's not.
Like, we would have found him sexy anyway. Trust a me.
Okay.
I would have found him sexy anyway. Trust me.
I'm here for the short king, Oscar. Oscar.
He was hot too.
Little fucking red leather gloves.
Jay Kelly is good.
I like Jay Kelly a lot. I cried.
There were multiple times when I was like, is Robin crying? Why would Robin be crying at this movie?
I'll tell you why I was crying. Because to me, the movie is about regretting your whole life.
That's true. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Absolutely fair.
Both Jay Kelly and Adam Sandler's character, who's like a co-lead, are just like looking back on the last 30 years and going, what? Yeah. what did I do? And I just found that really compelling.
Yeah, I said when we walked out, this snuck up on me. Because for most of it, I was like, this is funny and amusing and I'm enjoying it. And then
when we were walking out, a fellow film critic, I don't know who, said, well, that was aggressively fine.
Aggressively fine.
For a lot of it, but then it really ends strong.
It's like La La Land. That ending got me.
And Adam Sandler is great.
Adam Sandler is great. I really do hope it happens for him finally.
Well, he's decided to stop dressing like a schlup in public.
He wants it so bad. He is like the Jim Carrey of our modern era, where he's like, validate me, Oscars!
I think this is his best performance.
It's his best performance by a lot. And Uncut Gems he was so good in Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems is great, but it's very in the pocket for him.
Right.
Whereas this, he really stretches and does really, really well.
There's like genuine subtlety to the performance. It's great.
Oh, good. Good for him.
Die, My Love.
Okay. You start.
I like Die, My Love fine. 7 out of 10. I put in my Letterboxd review, and I wasn't trying to be pretentious. This is literally the only way I can describe it. This is a toy that looks better kept in the package.
Aww.
If you take this thing out and start playing with it, it's gonna fall apart.
You mean if you think about it too hard?
Yes.
Okay, so
go watch it and then walk away.
Here's my thinking about it too hard. Mm-hmm. What is Lakeith Stanfield doing in this movie? What is that character about?
That she needs... wants to fuck?
Yeah.
Why
is an Academy Award nominated actor there for I want to fuck?
Because it's Lakeith Stanfield.
Is he just, maybe he really wanted to work with Lynn Ramsey? That was my best guess. Yeah. Or maybe he just loves to work.
It's possible. It could be any one of those things. He could have been walking by that day of the studio and someone was like, Lakeith, you got a minute. Mm-hmm. He's like, sure.
Well, I guess, we keep talking about how movies have been making me feel dumb recently. And I didn't like being like, there is a recurring motif that doesn't make sense to me. And it makes sense if it's just she wants to fuck. But then I'm like, but why is Lakeith Stanfield
there?
Why
is it Lakeith?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I flirted with 5 stars for this. Obviously, this is my train dreams. This is right. You know, like Sean likes movies about depressed men wandering. I like movies about crazy bitches going nuclear.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's no way to talk about this movie without talking about Mother, which, as you all know, I love that movie. So, like, of course I love Mother Part 2.
This is the better Mother, but because I hate Mother.
So. Okay. I would argue this is the better Mother because the person making it knows what it's about.
Right. That's fair. Motherfucker.
Yes, but Jennifer Lawrence she's the best millennial actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, full stop, period, whatever you want to say. And she is on one here. Mm-hmm. Like, she is just eating this role with relish. And I just loved watching it. And I love Sissy Spacek.
Oh.
The other half of my Letterboxd reviews is cackling Spissy? Cackling Sissy Spacek wandering around at night clutching her rifle is the hero America needs right now.
It is true. Yes.
She's great.
Yeah.
Robert Pattinson's great. The whole cast is great. I mean, it's a little style over substance, but who cares?
The scene where she calls room service.
Oh, that's fun.
God, I love them.
Jennifer Lawrence is really, really good. Eternity with Elizabeth Olsen and her men is fine. It's a date movie if you want to go and have a date movie. It goes all the places you want it to go and will cure your existential dread only while it's going on. That dread will restart the moment the movie ends. And It Was Just an Accident is the Palme d'Or winner. And people are talking about it in every category as a potential Best Picture nominee, as a potential Best Director nominee. I like it a whole lot. 8 out of 10, maybe even 9 out of 10. It didn't quite knock me out. I'm wondering if that's because it's more subtle and we have this bias when it comes to weighty foreign dramas where we want it to be so heavy. And the fact that this has a little bit of farce to it and has an ambiguous ending is like, I want full misery porn, you know? So it's certainly worth seeing, particularly if you're brushing up on your Oscar movies. And it will be playing most places. It even is playing here.
That's exciting.
So.
Okay, wait, I have more things.
I thought you might.
Predator, Badlands.
Right.
Okay, so true story. I was intoxicated and I fell asleep during this movie like 5 times. But every time I would like nod and then lift my head up and be like, I'm missing something awesome. So this is the best Predator movie easily.
Oh,
like,
wow.
And Prey is great. So the thing that makes this movie so wonderful is Elle Fanning. You know, like the Predator and this android played by Elle Fanning are like, it's like a buddy cop situation for them. And they just, it's the relationship is so compelling and you get so invested in this predator, his thoughts, feelings, and wants and needs.
Does he talk?
Kind of. Okay. He talks in whatever that language is.
Like, is it subtitled?
And then she's like, I'm using my universal translator. Yeah. So here's the thing. This movie was good enough that if, because I haven't got an RSVP to Wake Up Dead Man, if they turn me away at the door, I'll be like, great, I'm going to go see Predator Badlands again and stay awake this time. Do you know what I mean? And like, truly, I would... If it weren't screener season, if I weren't like, I need to watch all of these movies, I'd be seeing it again anyway. Tonight will be the 4th day in a row that I go to the movies. So it's a little hard to double up on things. The other thing I saw this week was the new The Running Man.
I didn't know it was an Edgar Wright movie until after the fact.
And what I said to Sean is that you might not have known unless you saw it in the credits, because all of the flourishes that you expect from Edgar Wright are absent. The movie is fine. The action is good. It is propulsive in an energy. It, you know, it's over 2 hours long, but doesn't really feel like it. And that's one thing about Jay Kelly. It does feel.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little long. But anyway, it doesn't feel like it. Glenn Powell's good. You know what I mean? Like, it's not bad, but it is a big disappointment because it's certainly not good. And the thing that I found such a letdown, like, Glenn Powell's character is so mad. They say, like, he's the angriest person who's ever gone through their what TV show should you be on testing. And I am currently so mad at the state of the world. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a movie that's like, you know, matching the current rage of the moment. And then that just kind of goes away. And then is sort of taped over with like, we're going to have the revolution through zines. And I'm like, I don't know if we are, guys.
Everything you're saying feels like a Gerard Butler action movie that I have no problem watching and then forget I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. And it that is kind of what it's like. It doesn't feel like a Edgar Wright movie. And I don't even love Edgar Wright the way that everybody else did. No, that was Tony Scott.
Oh, okay.
Edgar Wright did Scott Pilgrim and Hot Fuzz. And
gotcha. Okay. Yeah, he's the one that works with Simon Pegg.
And bad movies like Last Night in Soho, which I think was his last movie.
I liked that.
Oh, my God. So, but it just seems like any old action director did it. Yeah. Michael Cera's great.
Didn't know he was in it.
He's only in it for about 10 minutes, but he's great.
As much as we need.
Yeah. It's okay. It's one of those things where I'm like, if you were on the fence about whether or not you should make time to go see it, I'm going to say wait for video.
There's a drive-in double feature of that and that secret bonus Osgood Perkins movie. So if the weather's all right, I'm going.
Yeah.
Keeper, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
It's.
I'm into it.
They teased it at the end of The Monkey. Like the trailer is on the print of the monkey, like X and Pearl and Maxine. And sir, you are no X and Pearl and Maxine.
Now let's just calm down.
I did find out that he's Osgood Perkins 2. because Osgood Perkins 1 was in the original Scarface, which I watched.
What?
Basically, he's a Nepo grandbaby.
Oh, grandbaby.
Yes. Okay. And so Anthony Perkins is his dad, right, but Anthony Perkins' father was also an actor named Osgood Perkins.
Got it.
Who's in the movie Scarface.
Oh, I see.
The 30s Scarface.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's draw a movie.
Okay.
Wait, is Long Legs supposed to be a part of this too?
I mean, they're all by him, but they're not connected that we know of.
Right.
Maybe he will to be a dick.
Okay, so before we move on, though, quick, Robin, have you seen All Her Fault?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
What is that?
It's a series, a limited series on Prime about a woman's child who's kidnapped.
Oh, boy.
An old girl from Shiv from Succession is the mom.
Oh, I did know she had a new show.
So good.
Okay.
So good. I'm not going to say anymore because there's so much twists and turns. Michael Pena, I think, is also.
Okay. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's the detective. So it's just very.
All Her Fault.
Yeah.
On Prime.
Or Hulu. I don't remember.
All Her Fault. Streaming somewhere. Yes. All right. I'll look into it. Thank you.
What's weird is in the depths of my I don't watch series and slowly inching away from comedy for the past 7 years, I'm watching Game Changer compulsively.
Mm.
Game Changer. What's that?
It's on Dropout. Do you know Dropout?
No, not really.
There's a streaming service.
Streaming services.
There's a streaming service that is just for people who are big in the improv world in LA right now.
Interesting.
It's actually a descendant of College Humor. Like
sounds
at some point, no,
I'm sorry.
At some point, College Humor became Dropout, and it has all of these kind of captive shows.
Oh, I get it.
The biggest one are those shows where people play Dungeons and Dragons in real time.
Okay, yeah.
And Game Changer is kind of a much funnier, much like fun, more funny focused twist on Taskmaster, British show. And I don't know what compelled me to try this one night, and now it's all that I want to see. I think it's because I'm looking into an alternate universe where the world is still sensible and friendly and happy and queer and Californian. Mm. And it's just so positive and affirming that I'm watching improv game shows all day.
Sure. Nice. Okay.
I love that for you.
Go for that if you need positivity and happiness. Instead, we'll watch another Star Trek. We've done enough. Veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
Which one was it?
Generations.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're not doing three in a year.
Okay.
Just on principle.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's the one with both casts.
It is the one with both casts.
Which might be interesting, but I'm like, we've done with it's. They're not even. It wasn't even early this year.
No, I am fine with not being the only person who cares about a movie that we cover again.
Instead, unflexible, I issued a veto, so we have to watch The Way We Were. It's a slice of cinema history I have not seen.
That's not good.
And Robert fucking Redford again? Like, is that what this is?
And Barbara.
We've opened the floodgates.
Mm-hmm. It's less than 2 hours. I assumed it was going to be 150 minutes.
Oh,
long,
no.
So 118 feels better. The Way We Were.
The Way We Were.
Is it that song?
Yeah. Won an Oscar.
How
maybe you'll like it.
Let's get this out of the way. See. Let's get this out of the way now, just to not kill time.
Hello.
And I want to see if you know how many wins and how many nominations.
I'm pretty sure it was just that one nomination and that one win.
Oh no.
Oh, okay. Oh no, she was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those were the ones I got.
Two wins and four nominations.
The other win sound?
No, best original dramatic score.
Oh, okay.
It's a Marvin Hamlisch.
Oh, good for him. He got.
And original song, nominated for best actress, best art direction, best cinematography, and best costume design.
Wow, okay.
Let's do it. It's a big movie. Let's do a big, important movie.
Big deal.
It's not good.
The two-thirds of it. Don't set us up like that.
Sorry, okay.
I know, right?
Maybe you'll love it. Maybe you'll love it.
I don't think she's listening, and I won't call her out by name, but one of our fellow Pittsburgh film critics, as I was walking into Frankenstein, was like, I didn't like it at all. And I'm like, what are you doing to me? Now I was coming in here on a cloud of spooky business, and now you're raining on that parade, and now all I'm thinking is, uh-oh, what if it isn't?
Right.
And then I was a little disappointed.
That's okay. Weird.
I'm sorry.
Maybe this will be like Mary Poppins, where I'm just crying at the end and unexpectedly.
A politically active Jew meets a feckless wasp.
I wish everyone could see Camila's face right now. It's a poem.
So, Ghostbusters.
Hello.
Ghostbusters was released June the 8th, 1984. Well, already established, wasn't the song didn't hit number one until
later.
So what was
it? Hello?
No, that was last time.
Purple Rain.
No.
Like a Virgin.
Mm-mm.
Well, we talked about all those other 84 albums, and now so it was a.
It's from one of those other 84 albums.
Was it Bruce Springsteen?
No.
Tina Turner.
No, you've named every one of those albums we talked about in the last episode, except this one.
Oh,
Phil Collins, Cyndi Lauper.
Mm-hmm.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
No.
Shebop.
No.
Time After Time.
That's the one.
That was nice.
Thanks.
I think that was the most. I don't know if it was the best, but that was the most fun I had at a person plays a whole album, because I saw Cyndi Lauper play that whole album.
That whole album is so good. Every single song on that album is a bop.
Everyone and she didn't write many of them. Most of those are covers.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a Prince song. When You Were Mine is a Prince
song. Oh, that's
right. Yeah. But it was so good, and she's such a good. Go see Cyndi Lauper. That's my advice to you, if that is possible. And I don't know if she's still touring.
You can see her in a lot of psoriasis ads.
I was just about to say, that's what I've been exposed to lately.
Even that. Just let it brighten your day.